السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله وحده والصلاة والسلام على من لا نبي بعده، ونشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، ونشهد أن سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمدا عبده ورسوله. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. وأما من خاف مقام ربه ونهى النفس عن الهوى فإن الجنة هي المأوى. صدق الله العظيم. علماء الكرام، most respected brothers or sisters who listen over receivers and at the madrasa, in today's session we will have two or three questions. As we have announced that we will take some questions, but there were so many questions that we have to start. We get so many questions every day. If we have to start, we will have whole year we can carry on. With the answers, we won't finish. So just two or three that came in a little while ago, I will discuss that without mentioning any names or any person. But the questions seem to be relevant to Ramadan and Etikaf and what we should do after that, since we are coming to the end, and something else that deals with some program that was on some radio station. So besides the other things that have been mentioned of the benefits of being in this masjid and in Etikaf and the spiritual upliftment that the person seems to feel and all that. But he has a very valid question that in Etikaf there are no distractions. Away from Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, there are no distractions. However, when you go to the outside world, we are bombarded with evil and distractions. In the home, in the workplace, in the shopping centers, everywhere there's nothing but distractions. I know that how much effort is exerted during these days will inshallah bear fruit outside. However, not much was required as we were in the masjid and in Ramadan. But when we go back, what do we do? How do we retain that enjoyment in Ibadah, etc.? This is something that worries a lot of people. It is definitely not possible to keep that same spirit that the person had inside the masjid, in the month of Ramadan, in Etikaf, in a good environment, in an environment of tilawat, zikr, ibadat. So it is easy. But what was the purpose of the Etikaf? The purpose was to repair these engines of ours, which have been badly damaged, or these cars of ours, spiritual cars, which were badly battered in the outside world for the 11 months. So we come into the masjid in Etikaf or in Ramadan for no other reason except that we get those engines back in good running order, we get all the dents of those cars removed, panel beaten, so that we may be able to drive again on the highway and on corrugated roads without any difficulty and problem. So now that will depend on the individual himself, that how much effort he put into developing that God consciousness, as we always hear in the month of Ramadan, purpose of fasting, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, that you learn to restrain yourself, that you develop taqwa in you. So some cars are damaged to such a very, very small damage. It doesn't take time. The person can get it repaired in a couple of hours. Some cars are damaged. They require sufficient time. The panel beater will have to remove this part of the body, that part of the body, bring some new parts and fit it in on, and after that they start moving. And some cars, they are so badly damaged, terrible accident, hit into a truck or the roll down the the cliff or something happened very badly damaged. That requires a long time. The spinal beaters also sometimes they say that it is beyond repairs. Unless of course you leave it with us for a whole year or for 6 months, then we'll go and get the different parts from the different places that, and then assemble it and give you again a new car. So that will depend on the person in i'tikaf, that what was his condition. But whatever the condition, if the person made the correct effort and developed the taqwa in him, then he will not be able to retain that same spirit that was in the masjid. But the masjid is not the place of amal. The masjid is the place for that repair. The amal will now be in the outside world. You can't expect a person to take tasbih and sit down in the masjid 7:24. All the time is in the masjid. We have to be in the outside world. We have to go to the businesses. We have to go to the professions. We have to go for all other requirements. Bazaar, shopping complex, sometime travel out. Everything will have to happen. So, dunya ke mashghalon mein bhi wo ba khuda rahe. Wo sab ke saath rehke bhi sab se juda rahe, which we have been hearing. That the person will be in all those activities, but he must be ba khuda. Just as he was in the masjid. Now the question is, how will that happen? There's no other way except to retain that conscious awareness that my Allah is everywhere. Allah was not only in the masjid. Was Allah Ta'ala only watching in the masjid? That in the masjid the person was a good abid and good musalli and good zakir and shaghil and everything else. But once you go outside the masjid, then that Allah does not watch anymore. This is why I've been repeatedly saying throughout the month of Ramadan that there is no other way or there's no other solution to the problems of mankind. All the talk about high crime level and everything else and insecurity and all the problems that we are witnessing and all the quarrels and arguments and fights and everything else. If only there was God consciousness that we are the bandas and slaves and servants of Allah Ta'ala. And our Allah is watching. And He has got a constitution for us that we must operate according to that. If everyone did that, there would have been no problems at all. Then also we cannot say that that was only for the time of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, that if people made amal and practiced, then Allah Ta'ala rewarded them and gave them dominance and Allah Ta'ala gave them government and Allah Ta'ala gave them empires at their feet. It was only for his time. Is it mentioned in the Quran Sharif anywhere that it was only for the time of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam? Is it mentioned anywhere that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam was a Nabi of Allah Ta'ala only for the people of Saudi Arabia or Hijaz at that time? It is for all times till the day of Qiyamah, provided the majority implement it. So in the i'tikaf, this is what the person was supposed to be doing, or in the masjid in the month of Ramadan. The whole purpose of all those exercises was so that we put our cars in good running order. Now when we go into the home, we must be a different, the person must be a different person. If prior to coming in i'tikaf, the person was having problem with his wife, with his children, with his parents, now when he returns, then he must demonstrate what he received from the masjid. He must now show that akhlaq and character of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. He must show that he has built up something inside now. There is a total change and reformation. The same when he goes to his business, now the person must be honest, he must be truthful, he must not cheat, he must not deceive. He must not take interest, must not give interest. The person must earn halal, he must spend in the correct way. That means there must be a demonstration of that in all fields. In a nutshell, in all fields, that when the person is out now, he has to demonstrate that which he has built up inside. There must be a reflection of that on the outside now. So that all will depend on each individual. But as far as retaining that spirit is concerned, so there are two ways of getting warm. One is the person sits near a heater. If he sits near the heater, then as long as the heater is on and he's sitting near it, so on a cold day he'll feel warm. Or there's a fire that is on. Or the person has got a blanket on him. He's covered up with blanket and hand gloves and double socks and all thermal vests, everything. So now all these things are keeping him warm. But the moment he's going to move away from that fire, the moment he moves away from the heater, put those fans off at the back there. This to slow it up. So the moment he moves away from there, he is going to start feeling cold again. The moment he removes his jersey and his thermal vest and his double socks and his hand gloves, he'll start feeling cold again. Because he has moved away or he has removed those items that were giving him the warmth. Because all these things are from the outside. Whether it was a jersey, whether it was the heater, whether it was the fireplace, all these things are outside his body. You understanding, all these things are outside his body. They're not inside. So that is one way. And the other way of keeping the body warm is where the person is eating, like our wrestlers do, 10 dozen eggs, 1 dozen chicken, and all other kinds of food. Now the person is eating that kind of food which gives the body warmth. From inside now is building the heat. Or is taking those steroids or the medication or tablets or capsules or whatever it is. When a person is body temperature, the person is feeling very, very cold, and they give him different kinds of things to make his body hot and warm. So now that is going inside. How many times on an extremely cold day the person says, I am getting a lot of ghabraat, feeling very, very hot. Now you're saying it's very cold, say, no, take the blanket out and put the fan on. So many people, sometimes in old age, and sometimes young people, depending on what happened inside his body, the person sometimes feels cold, sometimes feels hot. So the other way of developing heat in the body and feeling warm is by putting things into the stomach, which create heat in the system. So this zikrullah that we do, this ibadat that we do, this sitting in the masjid, and this reading of tasbih, and all these things that we are doing. Now most of it is from the outside, that whilst we are there in that environment, we are feeling that warmth, the masjid, the environment of the masjid, the people around us making zikrullah, tilawat, Quran Sharif, etikaf. Now that is what is keeping us warm. But the moment we go outside, now if we haven't developed anything inside, then that cold breeze will affect us again. All that breeze of fitnas will catch us again. So what we really have to be doing is that with all the zikr, tilawat, ibadat, we have to build up inside, that heat inside. That wherever we go, that heart will be with us. It's inside. The heart is inside. And it will go with us wherever we go. So now it doesn't mean that everywhere we'll be reading tasbih. But what it will mean is that wherever we will be going, we'll be conscious that my Allah is with me. As He was with me in the masjid, He is with me in the bazaar, in the marketplace, in the... So we say that will be difficult. Indeed, it will be difficult. In the early stages, it will be difficult. But once the person will get into the habit, then it will be more difficult to commit a sin. It will be more difficult to commit a sin than to do the good deed. The good deed will become a norm and the sin will become now difficult. Take a person who is a 5-time namazi. He makes namaz 5 times a day. Come wind, come rain, sunshine, cold, summer, winter, anything. But he's regular, he's paaband, he makes it 5 times a day. Now you tell that person that it's extremely cold. Today don't go to the masjid or don't make namaz. Remain in bed. Can that person remain? Person with weak iman too, he may be doing a lot of other wrong things too, but he's a paaband namazi. They'll say, no, 5-time namaz, I can't miss it at no cost. So what is it that gets him up? So all these things are connected with the heart. Otherwise, Hazrat Huzaifa radiallahu ta'ala, what did he say to Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam? That I've become a munafiq. Hazrat Hanzala radiallahu ta'ala, he said, I have turned a munafiq. And why have I become a munafiq? says, because when we sit in the majlis of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, it is as if Jannat, Jahannam, everything opens before us, as if we see all that. I'm just giving you the meaning of, mafhum of that. But you see, when we go back home, then with the wife, with the children and all that, we get so occupied that that kind of istihzar or that kind of consciousness that we had in that majlis of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, we don't seem to retain that. So he said, if that was your case, then the angels would have been making salam to you. But sometimes this, sometimes that, meaning that as long as the person is staying away from sins, he is conscious that my Allah is with me. That is sufficient. So there will be that effort that the person will have to make to resist those temptations. And that is what will give him the taqwa. There's no other way. The person has to make an effort just as he makes all other effort. And if he is sincere and over the accidental sins make a lot of tawbah and istighfar, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will bless him with those same rewards. And of course all the other things which I have discussed in detail in this, in the different programs. So listen to those tapes again. Also follow it up. After Ramadan, many people, they go forever. Then you only see them on a Jummah day. And that Jummah Bayan is also just 15 minutes or 20 minutes. And that too, we just dash from the business, listen to some Bayan and we go on. And the rest of the time is nothing but business, nothing but football and cricket and sport and everything else. So then definitely that person is not going to be able to retain that. So after the Ramadan also, good programs, good majalis, good waaz and nasihat, wherever it's taking place, whichever area the person is, then read the Quran Sharif every day as we were reading. You may not read 10 paras and 5 paras, but read even 4 rukus. Take one good translation and commentary of the Quran Sharif. Read 2 pages of it. Take Fazail Kitab, read 1-2 pages of that. Take one Sirat Kitab of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, read 1-2 pages. Take Bayt Zewar also. Good Masail Kitab, read. Now if the person even spends half an hour, 45 minutes in these type of things, listen to some good tapes. In the car also keep some good Qiraat tapes, some Naat Sharif, some Waaz, some Nasihat, instead of listening all the time to other programs. So in that way what will happen is the person will retain that and then go and spend some time in the masjid in good company. May Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala give us the tawfiq of making amal. The rest of the questions, inshallah, which our brother has sent it, then he must see me, I will answer him, inshallah. Now this is with regards to that, as I said, this is a Q&A now. Quarrels and arguments is not, most of the time that's what it is when it comes to Q&A. But in one pamphlet, I think they forgot the end. It just had QA. So I said, well, this QA means quickly answer. So we'll try to answer quickly because we don't have much time. So in this Q&A, now the end is missing. So it's Q&A. Allah Ta'ala puts the right answers. Kindly clarify, there was a radio program on compulsory AIDS testing for grooms. I wish to know, is it necessary for the groom to inform of all sicknesses? I have undergone some operation and some effects are still felt. If a person has had some kind of haram contact but no AIDS, does he have to inform? I have been for a proposal 2 or 3 places, but the condition they make is that I must live separately. Can I just say, yes, I will find something, although I do not have any intention, because I cannot separate from my parents. My parents are not old, nor do they need my assistance, but I have become accustomed to their help. I can afford a separate flat, but find it difficult to spend. Also, my mother will not be too happy, please advise. Now, these are the 3 questions. That's fine. I don't know, I haven't heard the program, what it was all about. But I do know that somebody had suggested that there should be mandatory testing for AIDS for all grooms. Now that is not Sharia, that's not Quran, that's not Sunnah. That every person must go and have a test for AIDS. Why do we impose something that Sharia, Quran, Sunnah did not impose? So be that as it may, that is not mandatory. We cannot make it mandatory. We cannot make it in like a compulsory teaching of Sharia, Quran and Sunnah. Then anyone who is going for to propose somewhere, we say, they must first go for 8 tests. However, in the times that we are living, full of fitnas, full of corruption, full of mischief, and we know that what kind of trauma and suffering some women undergo when it is discovered that the husband was suffering from AIDS. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes the woman is suffering. Sometimes for sins that they have committed, that is the cause of it. And sometimes it's not the sins that they have committed, it's an accidental thing that happened. There could have been a prick of the needle. Some doctors become affected because of that accidental jab. Many, many other things can happen. Person was taken to the hospital and there was an emergency. There had to be a transfusion of blood. And the blood that was given probably was not properly checked or whatever it may have been, and it could have been transferred. So whether it was due to sins or otherwise, that is between him and Allah Ta'ala. But what we are saying is that when the person is putting a proposal, when he's going somewhere for a proposal, then if this person knows that he has been engaging and indulging in those sins which are generally the cause of AIDS, then definitely he should have himself checked up and inform that party. Then it's left to that girl. If she is still happy to have him as a husband, then that's good luck to her. But at least she knows about it. I have dealt with cases where, knowing fully well that this person has got AIDS, but the wife says, I'm not going to leave him. The parents want me to leave him, but I don't want to. I want to stay with him. Whatever it is, I love him and he can be in whatever state, although it may not be full blown now, but whatever it is, I'm not going to separate. So now that is their choice after that. It doesn't say in the Hadith Sharif or Quran Sharif or anywhere that it is haram to marry that person. Because some of them cannot even know early stages what is happening. But there are lots of young boys also who have been affected. I have dealt with many, many cases. It's very sad. Sometimes you really, it makes you cry. Especially when a young boy of 17, 18, 20, and they come and say, Maulana, make dua, and this is what has been discovered, and unfortunately I got caught up in this and caught up in that. And at that time you just think the beautiful flower of Islam is withering away. Where did the person spend his life? And how is he going to spend the rest of his life? So the question here is that should everything be informed? Yes, indeed. If the person is suffering from this kind of disease, then he should inform. He must not make the life of the wife miserable, traumatic, and problematic. Then he must inform clearly that this is my situation. But there are lots of other sicknesses. It doesn't mean that all the details you have to give there. If the person underwent some operation and now he's fit and healthy, then I doesn't have to say in 1970 I underwent this, 1980 I went this, 1990 I went this, and in March 2008 I had an ingrown toenail, and last week I had a headache also whilst I was on the cricket ground. All that is not necessary. If the sickness is of a type which we term as contagious, it can pass on. Now that also is subject to debate. When does it pass on? But the thing is that if it is something like that, then the person informs, then it's necessary. But it's not that every little sickness, every little operation, now you go there and sit down with a whole list and start reading out. So if the person has had some haram contact and he says that there's no AIDS at present, then although he may be saying not at present, but then it's necessary to have himself checked out so that he doesn't create a problem later on. Otherwise it will affect the marriage. Marriage is supposed to be for life. Marriage or we would say the wife is supposed to be for life. Not like these days where 10 months, 6 months, 1 month, 2 weeks, and that's the end of the marriage. So you do not want this marriage to end because of this type of problem. As with regards to those proposals that he is talking about, and they all are demanding separate living. This I have been talking from ages, 20-25 years, or 40 years now in bayans, waz and all that, many different nikah bayans and big night bayans, where you pick up those tapes about mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship and all that thing. And all the problems that our society face, I keep on saying that that is the best solution, that when the child gets married, then you ask them to live happily, separately, but monitor, keep the doors open, let them come, let them go, you look after them, they look after you, and they come happily, you go happily. That is the solution to the problem, what people are facing everywhere. Shariat also is the best of all Shariats, it's the best of all Deen. So it doesn't force a person that you must live separately. That's another wrong understanding. It doesn't say you must go and live separately. Some people are living very, very happily together, go to different places. Everyone cannot afford a separate flat and a separate home and all that. But at least an independent room. And what is most important is the separation of kitchens today. Because that is where the pots and the kettles start rattling. Little things. Sometimes the girl will do everything. The daughter-in-law has worked so hard at her mother's house, and she took all the reprimanding and scolding and shake-up that the mother gave and made her clean the room and the kitchen and everything. The moment she comes to the mother-in-law's house, if the mother-in-law has to just say something, then she'll say, my mother-in-law is very unjust and she's making me do things which are beyond my capacity and all kinds of problems. And sometimes those mother-in-laws are like that, that they think that now that I've got this daughter-in-law, so what does it matter now? Now I must relax. Now she must do everything. She must take care of me too, take care of my other children also. So many mother-in-laws are putting all the burden on those daughter-in-laws. They must look after, they must make the breakfast and the lunch and the supper for the brother-in-laws and for the sister-in-laws and for the, why? Because they all are gone to work, and now when they will come back, now this young daughter-in-law that has come into the house, if she's not going to get upset and become sick, then what else is going to happen? She's not going to have love for that mother-in-law. So Shariat, one, there must be love, there must be muhabbat, there must be peace, there must be happiness. So circumstances will differ, but however this much she has a right. To say that I need separate accommodation, not meaning palace of King Abdullah or some big mansion, because that is the demand sometimes, must have a big car, must have a big home, must have a big palace, must have this. Those kind of demands are not what Shariat is saying. Shariat is saying that where she has a room, where the mother-in-law is not going in and out of the room, because this is another big problem. They say, the moment I go out of my room, my mother-in-law sneaks into the room to check up what's in my cupboards. Now, is that right? Is the Shariat allows that? So just as it is not permissible for the mother-in-law to do that, or father-in-law to do that, in the same way it's not permissible for the daughter-in-law to do that. So there is a balance. Shariat always talks about balance. There's no extremism. So on the one hand, she has that right. So we should not get upset if she's asking for that kind of a right. So that there will be happiness and peace. Because we deal with these cases every day, believe me, 3-4 cases we must deal with. Petty things, trivial things, and it become big arguments and marriages break down. Obviously, when a young girl is just going to get married and come into the house, she has sometimes just come out of school. And when they go for the proposal, at that time they say, she's my daughter, don't worry, everything, we will teach her. And when she comes into the house, then she says, what kind of a daughter you? What kind of a wife you married? She can't even crack an eggshell. So you took her out from the school. So all the promises that are made are forgotten. That's why I say there's no other solution to that except that the daughter-in-law must consider the mother-in-law as a mother. Treat her as a mother. So mothers sometimes will scold also, they'll reprimand also, they will say, do this, do that also. But treat them as mothers. And the mother-in-laws must treat them as daughters. And this is another daughter that has come. Just as I would like that my son-in-law treat my daughter in a good way, give her comfort, keep her happy, don't burden her beyond that which she can manage. Every person wants his daughter to be treated in the best of manner by the son-in-law. So like that, we must treat somebody else's daughter also in the best of manner. Then love will build up in the heart. After that, she will not want to separate from their mother-in-law. They'll be like friends. They will talk, they will laugh, they will joke. It will not be that tension and that kind of a tug-of-war that is going on nowadays. So if where the person is going for proposal according to this question, if they are saying that they want separate, then at least separate means this. Give them one room, one kitchen, and this thing. And then come, go, eat, drink together, have your parties and have your festivals and everything else. But at least there's independence in that regard. Because as I said, when she's just married and come, now sometimes they're getting up late in the morning after Fajr, they sleep away. And most of the times, of course, they don't even make Fajr. But the thing is, now that is where the problem starts. They look at her, she's only sleeping all the time. So to avoid troubles, it is not to break up family relationships or separate fathers and mothers. There are so many people who are living separately, but they're so happy. Practically all the time they're in contact, they're coming, going, bringing, taking, and they're happy. So if you can live happily, alhamdulillah. But if you cannot, so then give them that. And if they are demanding, then they have a right. After that is left to the person that's going to put the proposal, that if he cannot, then tell clearly, I'm sorry, I can't leave the home. And what he is mentioning here, that the parents are not even old, they're not sick and weak, they don't really need his financial assistance or anything, in fact they help him. But then one thing, because they say whatever is in the heart comes out. Now, this one thing that he mentions here, I find it hard to spend. Now, that seems to be the problem. That he's finding it hard to spend. So some people are kanjus makki choose now. Now if you give your daughter to such kind of people, it's a big problem. Because the person will ask hisab. Honestly, I'm telling you, that one lady says that he buys half a dozen eggs, he eats one a day, and at the end of the week, he wants to know what happened. That means he even forgot that there's 7 days in the week. He only buys half a dozen for the week, and every day he wants one. And on Sunday, he asks, what happened to the eggs? Finish. So now what are you going to do with such kind of people? That means he even forgot that I bought half a dozen and I ate up the six and there's still one more I'm supposed to have been buying for the seventh day. They say there were three people. That one person says that the light bills are all going very high now. Electricity accounts are going very high. ESCOM has raised the prices. So therefore what I have done, he says that this fan has got three blades. So I've taken out one blade. So now only two blades operate, so the bill came little down. So the other person said, well, what I did is I took out two blades. So only one blade goes round and round. So now I don't have to pay so much. So the third person said that you all are fools. I don't have any kind of account for fans operating. So why? He said, because I've got all three blades, but I sit under the fan and I shake myself. So if this person cannot spend, then something must be done about it. He must make islah of his nafs. He must remove his miserliness. Miserliness is a big, big problem. Miserliness has caused breakdown of marriages. The person who's miserly, he just wants to save his money, and sometimes he asks the wife all the time, what did you bring from your father's house? He wants to just use her money. He doesn't want to even use his money. Because he has grown up like that, doesn't want to spend. Whereas spending on the children, spending on the wife, spending on the needs of the family, it's all sadaqah. Look at Shariat, how beautifully he's giving us sawab of sadaqah, and that's the best of sadaqah, spending on one's children. for their needs. So the person mustn't think that he is not going to be rewarded. And after all, if he is going to accumulate it, hoard it, and keep it in bank accounts and keep it in investments, is he going to die or not going to die? So when he's going to die, then who's going to get it again? The same children will get it. So these are our weaknesses, our shortcomings. If you say, please advise, I want to marry urgently. He also wants to get married very urgently. So that's the advice that I'm giving. Just learn to spend and make up your mind. If you got sufficiency, you say you can afford a flat too, and you can, whoever the person is must be listening, I don't know. But if the person can afford a flat too, and is earning well too, and the parents are not old too, and everything, then go find a place and tell them that, you know, we will inshallah live separately. But that inshallah must not be that if Allah Ta'ala wills, then on the day of Qiyamah we'll find an accommodation. It means that the person must not be speaking lies. Otherwise it will lead to problems. But if he makes it clear from day one that this is what I can afford, this is what I cannot come out now, I have to spend at least another 2-3 years with them, they cannot also stay without me. So let's make it clear, then if they will and they accept, alhamdulillah, and if they don't, then try somewhere else. Try somewhere else doesn't mean there's only one girl in the world. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم يا أرحم الراحمين يا أكرم الأكرمين يا غياث المستغيثين يا راحم المساكين يا حي يا قيوم برحمتك نستغيث Oh my beloved Allah, Rahim Allah, Kareem Allah. The Mubarak month of Ramadan, days went by. We spent our time in negligence, indifference, in disobedience. My beloved Allah, so much of sins we committed even in the month of Ramadan. How much of our time went in futile activities, futile talk. My beloved Allah, change the condition of our hearts. Give us the tawfiq to appreciate the remaining days and nights and hours and seconds of the month of Ramadan. We don't know whether we will witness another Ramadan. My beloved Allah, Ramadan is coming to an end. And one day our lives will also come to an end. We haven't accumulated sufficient capital, my beloved Allah, to bring a cross on the other side. We have no good deed capital with us. What little we do, we destroy it with ghibat, with backbiting, with jealousy, with malice, with greed, with pride. Oh my beloved Allah, we have no capital. What we have is your rahmat, your mercy, your forgiveness. You dearly love forgiveness of the sins of the sinners who turn towards you. Change the condition of our hearts. Change the condition of our lives. Change the direction of our lives. Bless us with the hearts that you give to your walis, may Allah. Fill our hearts with your muhabbat and the love of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Our hearts have become pitch black, my beloved Allah. Gunah par gunah karte 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 mere Allah, humare dil siya ho gaye. Hum gunegar hai, siyakar hai, badkar hai, mujrim ka khata ka. Hum gande hai, mere Allah. Lekin tere bande hai. Whatever we may be, we are your slaves. We are your slaves, my Allah. Our hearts are in your control. Take us on the road that leads to you, the road that leads to Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the road that leads to Jannah. Bless us all with good health. We are sick and ailing, my beloved Allah. We are physically ill, we are spiritually sick. Whosoever is sick and ailing, whether in hospital, clinic, home, amongst us, those who have undergone operations, those who will be undergoing operations, those who have met up with accidents, those who are suffering from different kinds of sicknesses and problems, Ya Allah, with your fazl and with your kindness, remove their sickness, their pain, the suffering and problems. Bless everyone with complete shifa. For some we know it is a rahmat and a mercy, my Allah. But even if it is rahmat, change it to the rahmat of good health. Bless us all with good halal wealth. Bless us with abundance in our rizq and sustenance, my beloved Allah. Bless us with barakat in our rizq and sustenance. Those who are weak, give them strength. Those who are on journeys, make them reach their destination safely. Those who have no children, bless them with pious children. Those whose children have gone on to drinks and drugs and vices and evils, bring them back onto Sirat-e-Mustaqim. My beloved Allah, my Rahim Allah, homes are on fire, homes are on fire. Unite the hearts of parents and children, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, family members, Ummat of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Oh my beloved Allah, bless us with the best of dunya and the best of akhirah. Hamare hal par raham farma. Open the floodgates of your maghfirat and mercy for us. Open the floodgates of your rahmat for us. My beloved Allah, accept our tilawat of the Quran Sharif, our fasting, our zikr, our duas, my beloved Allah, with your fazl accept it. Ek din marna hai, akhir maut hai. Don't let the angel of death find us in any kind of haram action. When the time of our departure comes, take us to Madina Tayyiba. Ya Allah, bless us with mouth in Madina Tayyiba, with burial in Baqi. If it is not destined there, wherever it may be, let it be in a state that you are pleased with us. Rasul-e-Pak sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, all his life he made duas for us. Bless us with all the goodness that he asked for us. Bless the ummah with that goodness. And from all the mischief, corruption and fitnas that he asked for protection, protect us and the ummah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Ya Allah, you are well aware of the good wishes, the good desires, the tamanna that is in the hearts of each and every individual who has raised his or her hand before you this part of the afternoon. Fulfill all their good wishes and good desires. And you are well aware of the difficulties, the hardship, the pain, the suffering of each and every individual. Ya Allah, remove the pain and suffering. Remove the suffering of the ummah of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Remove the suffering of mankind around the globe. Remove the conditions of AIDS and drought and famine and all other disasters. Ya Allah, protect us and safeguard us from all the fitnas, except all the works of deen that are taking place. ربنا تقبل منا انك انت السميع العليم وتب علينا انك انت التواب الرحيم وصلى الله تعالى على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمد واله واصحابه اجمعين برحمتك يا ارحم الراحمين. Inshallah, tonight will be the khatam of the Quran Sharif in Taraweeh. We'll have the first session from 9 o'clock till about 10 o'clock. Then we'll break till half past 10. Those who wish to remain for the second session can do so. It's the 29th night, so mentally condition ourselves, spiritually prepare ourselves. It is the last flight of the odd nights. If we have to take the last 10 nights and the odd nights to be like flights, then the 21st is gone, 23rd, 25th and 27th all gone, finish. If there is just one last flight left and the person has got his passport, visas and everything, so then he will board and go away for Hajj. But if he doesn't have it, then he'll have a problem. And sometimes it happens that last minute every arrangement is made and the person is told, okay, just come to the airport and we've got everything ready for you. How many cases it has happened in Umrahs and Hajj and other times that they say, no seat, no seat, no seat, nothing. Your visas won't be available until after a certain time. And then just 2 days before that or just on that same day, they say, you just get to the airport. We got your visas too and we got your seats too and we got everything and we put you on. So if you missed all the other flights, then there's another flight. Make the best of the 29th night. We don't know whether we'll see another 29th night. May Allah Ta'ala give me, give you, and the Ummah tawfiq of amal. آخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين. Majlis is over now, so those whose cars could be obstructing, those that are leaving, then make sure you don't remove your cars first before sitting here. Inna Allah, Inna Allah. And I've given you all the electricity saving tip. So the commission and the savings, you can send it to me. Inna Allah, Ya Allah. Hazrat Maulana Masihullah Rahmatullah Alayhi used to say, Khush raho, khushk mat raho. Stay happy. We don't have to be dry worshippers. Enjoy the ni'mats of Allah Ta'ala. Be cheerful. When it's time to cry before Allah Ta'ala, cry it out. Pour your heart out. Ask Allah Ta'ala for the best of both worlds. And then in the family, amongst friends, everywhere, and stay happy and cheerful. That is deen, that is sharia. Balance, there's a balance in everything. If we have to take every teaching of sharia, there's a balance. And we can write a whole volume on it. Mujaddidi Millat Rahmatullah Alayhi, so many things he has mentioned. Look at Imam Ghazali Rahmatullah Alayhi, so many things he has mentioned. All the Mufassirin, Muhaddithin, so many things when they talk about, you can see what a balance there is in Sharia. Whether it is Namaz, Roza, Zakat, Hajj, whatever it is, in dealings, in family life, in business life, in everything, all ahkam and laws and commands of Sharia, there's a balance. If we go on to extreme, then that's our problem. Even dini activities, we cannot go on to extremes. We have responsibilities, we have obligations, we have of the family, of the children, of their education, of everything. So there has to be a balance there too. How much time this person spends. There are some people who are retired, relaxed, they got no worry now for children, they all grown up, they married. There's just one doha, dohi alone. So then you can say, if the dohi is happy, you can send the doha whole year jamaat, no problem. Nothing wrong with it. Because sometimes they're happy that that old man goes because he's so fussy at home. They say, this old man, he gets me sick. Because he's at home all the time, can't. Little while shouting to his wife, he thinks, just bring that, you know, they get sick too, they can carry on. But that person who is young, who is just married, or he just got children, and that care has to be taken for their education, for their upbringing, and sometimes staying out too much from the home affects the upbringing of those children. The mothers cannot control them. Those children go away to the neighbors, and if that person hasn't got TV in his home, the neighbors got it, friends got it, or they're in all other kind of wrong company. Now when the mother tells them something, they don't listen. The father's authority is missing. So there must be a balance. Now again, we are not saying that the person mustn't go to the khanqah at all. He mustn't go to the jamaat at all. He mustn't go and sit in the sohbat of his shaykh at all. But there must be a balance. There must be coming and going. There must be not so many days that it creates havoc in the home life. So many young boys and girls, they went off beat and off track. So that ihtida, balance. In political life, this is supposed to be a balance. In business life, balance. Everything, you take anything and look at the Quran and Sunnah. Thing is, in whatever we apply our mind, that is what will open to the person. Now the person who's working on cell phone technology, and he looks deeply into that cell phone and all whatever is already there, develop this technology. But now he's looking deeply into it and thinking, what more can I come up with? So look at the new technology. First they came out with a cell phone, which was as thick as a brick. You had to carry on all half a kilo weight in your pocket. And now they say paperweight. So they couldn't have come to that paperweight technology unless somebody was applying himself to it. So just as when we apply ourselves to this field, then that whatever is in that field, Allah Ta'ala opens up into the mind of the person. Like that, Quran Sharif, Hadith Sharif, we are going to reflect and ponder over the ahkam of Allah Ta'ala. Then Allah Ta'ala will open up, look at the i'tidal, the balance, because it is from Allah Ta'ala, who is the most just and most fair. Now, something that is from Allah Ta'ala, so it must be just and fair, where every person can make amal in his time, in his climb, in his city, in his country. It won't be anything impossible. It could be a little difficult because of the environment which we have created. Environment, major part of it is our creation. There could be a little bit in the outside world which is beyond our control. But the environment of our homes, who stops us from changing it? Is it written in any kitab that we must have TVs and movies and DVDs of the haram kind? Doesn't say that. Yes, if Allah Ta'ala had ordered, stay awake all night, every night, and fast whole day, every day, then we would have said impossible. But here we are told, make Isha namaz and one sleep away, finish. Even if you don't make tahajjud salat, you don't get up at night, nothing. Then after Isha salat, straight away the person goes to bed. And gets up only Fajr time. Then too, you say that person, he is practicing on Sharia. You will call that i'tidal, there's nothing wrong with it. A person is not married, he's got no wife, no children, nothing. And Allah has given him sufficiency also. And this person now, straight away after Isha, he does nothing. Straight away goes and sleeps and get up Fajr. So the Sharia stop the person from doing that? Does it say, no, you must get up for tahajjud? Yes, the fazail and the virtues are different. That is for muhabbat the person does. But Sharia itself, there's nothing but i'tidal, a balance. There's no extremism in Sharia at all. Take any aspect of Sharia. Nothing but i'tidal. And that is what creates love in the heart for Sharia, for the Quran Sharia, for the Sunnah, and for the Deen of Islam, and for Allah Ta'ala, that how loving He is, how merciful, how just. Everything He gave us, beautiful balance. So don't go on to extremes and make life difficult, and then blame Islam for it. As far as mahol is concerned, mahol par padho la hawl, finish. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. To whatever extent we can change the environment of our home, of our business. Now let's take one simple example. Now we go to a doctor's surgery. Now the doctor is a Muslim doctor. Now is it written in any kitab that you must keep all those filthy magazines there? For everybody to come and read there. Does it say anywhere? Now who created that mahol in his surgery of that? Who created it? So now if people are coming there and reading filthy magazines, dirty magazines, and little children are sitting there and waiting for the doctor, now they're picking up also those same magazines. So at such a time, keep some good literature there. We don't say you have to keep Islamic literature. Doesn't say you must keep Islamic literature. Because they say we get a lot of non-Muslims and all this. So in fact, if it's good Islamic literature, which is like of a general nature, and it's not our related to our petty fights and quarrels and arguments, as long as that literature is not related to early bird chickens, so then there's no problem. Keep some good Otherwise, that non-Muslim will pick up that and he'll say, what's happening here? What kind of Islam is this? So keep some literature that is of, that will create an interest in the person's heart. They say after that 9/11, all the bookshops of America, you couldn't find a Quran Sharif translation there. Quran Sharif with translation, always sold out. Islamic literature was not available. Books were being selling like hot cakes there. People just got interested now, knowing what is happening. Muslim, who is this Muslim? What does his Islam say? So now if you have some good literature there, alhamdulillah. Even if you don't have that kind of literature, then keep such kind of magazines, such kind of books, which is of a very general nature, and keep some good Islamic books with it. So that is the mahol. I'm just giving you one example. It's not only the doctor's surgeries. Our homes also is the same thing. In our homes, as it says, that on the Sunday morning, you must have the Sunday Times open there with all its filthy pictures and then leave it there. Even if the person read some newspaper for the sake of some news, or say wants to see some what cars are for sale or something else, then after that, does it say that after that you must just leave it like that? Let the people now watch all the haram. Whatever was necessary, look at their other things, tear it and throw it away. Create an environment. Who stops us from creating a good environment at home? Sit, talk, discuss general issues with the family. And if they get tired, take them, go visit some nice place and come. Nobody says against stays stuck within one's home. Although in these days of fitna, that is the best thing to do. But we are creatures of society. We have to meet, we have to go, we have to visit masjid, we have to go everywhere. So just control the gaze as much as possible in the outside world and control the heart and make amal finish. The person is waliullah. Now that can't be difficult or impossible. We won't say it's impossible. So start off like that, that wherever we can make the changes, straight away make those changes. Those things we are finding it difficult to make immediate change, then make lot of istighfar and tawbah, cry over it, say, Ya Allah, my weakness that I can't seem to change this. Person has got a habit of shaving his beard. Now what does it cost if he doesn't shave his beard and keep it? Nobody's going to stop him. But if, for whatever reason, the person just cannot seem to get the himmat, now, it's not an impossible thing to keep it, but now he just doesn't get the himmat. Shaitan and nafs are dominant in his life. So instead of justifying it and criticizing the people with beard, the people with beard do this and do that. People with beards do a lot of things and people without beards do a lot of things. The beard didn't come in the sin. So now the person while he's shaving also, he thinks, Ya Allah, please make me maaf. Although that's not the thing to do, but even if he does that much, that Ya Allah, what a stupid I am, what a fool I am, I'm obeying my nafs, whereas you are the one that has blessed me with my heart, liver and lungs and my life and my body and this beautiful face you gave me and this garden of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. I don't pluck the flowers from the municipal garden because it's written there, don't pluck any flowers from here, otherwise you will be arrested or fined. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, this garden, he said that don't pluck anything from here up to one fish length. But I'm shaving it off completely and throwing it in the waste bin. What a nalayak I am, what a khabis I am. Sway oneself, curse oneself. Ya Allah, give me hidayat. Give me the tawfiq, give me himmat, give me courage. So then inshallah that person after a few times will leave it. Will start growing. So what I'm saying is that those things where we can start off easily, then start off. The other things slowly keep making tawbah, istighfar and effort. It'll come right inshallah. If millions of people have come right, why cannot we?